This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning, Bahamas. Good yawning this morning. Today is Monday, March 8, 2021, and I am super excited today. If you've seen the papers, you already know why. Today is International Women's Day. It's an important day for women all across the globe, even if we are experiencing different living conditions and working conditions, even if we are experiencing different communal and family situations and living arrangements, right? Like the saying goes, we all in the same storm, but we're not necessarily all in the same type of boat, right? So to all the women across the Bahamas, across the Caribbean, and across the globe, happy International Women's Day. I had a full show today, so my intro is going to be pretty short. But remember, you're on the clock with Erin Green. And on the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. You're listening to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Remember, we're streaming live audio and video on guardiantalkradio.com. So if you got to get out your car, turn it on your phone. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. So if you're taking care of the household chores today for your wife, sir, you could put it on the TV and listen while you're waking. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Or you can call us at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 326-4259. I hope you're going to call in today because I got plenty questions for you. First of all, I've got the book giveaway question number two. Now, last week, Friday, I told you that I wanted to pick a question that referenced some of the things mentioned in the article on Friday in the Nassau Guardian with comments from the Minister of Health, Renwood Wells, in response to the speaker's statement that or suggestion that he is inclined to introduce a Prime Minister's Question Time. Now, here's what the problem is. I spend all weekend looking for these House rules that the Minister, Renwood Wells, would have referenced in the article, and I can't find them anywhere. So I don't want to give you a question, A, that I don't know the answer to, and B, I don't want to give you a question that's so hard you got to hire a lawyer to answer it, because that's sort of counterintuitive to what we're doing. So I got two new questions for you today. Well, it's two questions roll into one. You have to answer both questions correctly to win the prize. The prize is a copy of the People's Constitution, a layman's interpretation of the Constitution of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, composed or organized by Keisha Ellis. So, we're going to start off with the questions. Who is the first woman to contest an election in the Bahamas? And who is the first woman to register to vote for an election in the Bahamas? I will repeat the questions. First woman to contest an election in the Bahamas and the first woman to register to vote in the Bahamas. Text in your answers. When I get the first correct answer, I will contact that winner and make arrangements for pickup of their prize. Again, let me repeat the question. First woman to contest an election in the Bahamas, first woman to register to vote in the Bahamas, and we will ask you to text in your answer. Thank you very much. So, I don't want the men to feel left out this morning, and you shouldn't feel left out, because when we celebrate women, we celebrate everything that women love and need. And guess what's at the top of that list? Right under mangoes and tamarind and plenty time at the beach. Man, we love men. We need men. We Bahamian women can't imagine a life without y'all in your various forms, right? So don't feel left out. So before we start, I got to read this headline in the Tribune. Lawyer who said he was blind, seen driving car. Let me repeat that. Lawyer who said he was blind, seen driving car. I'm just going to read the first paragraph. A Supreme Court judge has refused to give an attorney a second bite at the cherry, quote unquote, second bite at the cherry, and appeal sanctions related to his management of a $30 million estate on the basis that he is legally blind. And so I guess his entire legal position was thrown off course when evidence was produced that he was driving a car. Now, I would like to say to the magistrate that that is not sufficient evidence to say that he is not legally blind, because I see plenty of people who have to be actually blind driving their car in New Providence. And I've seen some of y'all all weekend. So, magistrate, please exercise the mercy in your heart and the mercy of the court before you throw this man in jail for doing absolute foolishness. And FYI, if you are declared legally blind, even if you could see out your one good left eye, don't drive your car. Please don't drive your car. Anyway, we're going to go to a quick break, and then when we come back, we're talking International Women's Day, CARICOM, UN Women, Conference on the Status of Women, and what's going on in this country with all this violence against women. We'll be right back after the break, Bahamas. Stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
My name is Janelle Pickering, registered midwife with the Ministry of Health. When we get vaccinated for COVID-19, we are not just protecting ourselves, we are protecting the people around us, like those who aren't able to get vaccinated due to allergies or illnesses. Protection from COVID-19 is critically important because for some people, the virus can cause severe illness or even death. Be sure you are armed with the facts when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccines. To learn more, visit opm.gov.bs/vaccine.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
For the past 33 years, Great Commission Ministries has been defending the poor and hurting, feeding the hungry, and sheltering the homeless. We invite you to support our Live to Give program and make a difference in these challenging times. Become a donor by giving a one-time annual gift or a monthly donation of $50 or $100. Call Great Commission Ministries at 325-5801 for more details. Or visit our headquarters at 237 Wolf Road. Join Live to Give today. This public service announcement is proudly sponsored by this radio station.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Yeah, it's Calypso Rose. The Calypso Queen of the World. Manu Joe Marshall Montano.
You're going crazy. Let go me hand. Let me jump up in the van. I don't want nobody to come and stop me. Leave me, let me free up. Myself, let me jump up.
Good morning, Bahamas. Good morning. Welcome to 96.9 FM, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. Today is International Women's Day, and that was just a little bit of liquor lyrics from Calypso Rose, one of the oldest and most successful women calypsonians in the region and the world. And I think Calypso Rose is in her 80s, right? And she's still performing. And this is a track that she released, I think, in 2019. And a part of it is to address attitudes around women's autonomy and their body and the choices that they make, both as single women and in relationships, right? And so, you know, from the 80s straight down to the little children, as you can see in today's section in The Guardian by Sharon Turner, Perspectives, that women of all ages are concerned about women's rights and the status of women. So as we begin the show, let me remind you of some things that are happening today. So we'll start with the Department of Gender and Family Affairs' virtual symposium, Women in Leadership, Achieving an Equal Future in a COVID-19 World. That started at 7 a.m. this morning, and there will be panels and speakers running all throughout the day, and you can find the link to join the symposium on the Department of Gender and Family Affairs' Facebook page, or you can call social services to get the link in person. Also, there is the Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority International Women's Day Forum called Women, How Far We've Come. That starts at 7 p.m., and you can find the link for that event online as well. And if you know Mavis Johnson Cawley, a noted Bahamian woman who is a part of the Alpha Kappa Alpha sorority, you can reach out to her for the information because I'm sure she has been a part of the planning for this event. She is always active in women's activities. And then the third event I want to draw your attention to is the Equality Bahamas and National Art Gallery of the Bahamas' virtual tour for International Women's Day. And that exhibition is the Medicine and Memory Exhibition, and the tour begins at 6 p.m. You can find the link for that event on Equality Bahamas' Facebook page or NAGB's Facebook page, or you can call the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas for a link to the event. As you can see, with all the wonderful ads in today's papers, in social media, that we do take women seriously in this country. We take women in leadership seriously in this country, and we put our money where our mouth is. Or at least, we are beginning to do that. But there's a lot more work to be done, and there's a very technical side to these activities. And the Bahamas government and Bahamian organizations spend a lot of time, energy, and money participating in that technical side, right, of the work to end violence against women and girls. So today, my guest is Alicia Wallace, and we will be discussing some of that work that the Bahamian government, Bahamian men and women, and Bahamian institutions have been engaged in to ensure that we are also participating in the fight, or better yet, the movement to end violence against women. So I see my text line is lit up with answers. Keep rolling them in. I also want to ask the audience to please today share with us, who is your woman hero? Who is your woman hero? I can share my mine's, because I have like four later in the show. But please call in, text in, who is your woman hero and who do you think in this town deserves recognition and has not gotten it yet? So to my guest, good morning, Alicia Wallace. How you do? I am good, good. I am good, good. So listen, the first question is, what is International's Day? Why is it important? Why do we participate in it?
International Women's Day is kind of two things rolled into one. On one side, it is a celebration of the achievements that we've made toward gender equality. And on the other hand, it is a day of action to push us even further and to activate new people to join this movement toward gender equality.
Absolutely. So today we're going to talk about the CARICOM statement, right?
Yes.
The Bahamas is a part of CARICOM, and I'm sure we participated in this, but quickly tell us, what is the CARICOM statement and why was it important for us to contribute?
So the CARICOM statement is preparatory to CSW, or the Commission on the Status of Women, the 65th session, and this meeting takes place in New York at the United Nations every year. This year, of course, it's virtual due to the COVID-19 pandemic, but it is a space to review the Beijing platform from 1995, and that is a document that, it's pretty lengthy, but if you look it up, the Beijing platform for action, the actual platform is only about 4 pages, so it's a pretty quick read, and it's focused on gender equality. So every year, UN member states come together in New York, or virtually this year, to talk about the achievements that they've made and what is still left to be done, and then they make commitments. So the CARICOM statement is the Caribbean region's contribution to the outcome document.
Okay. All right. So, Alicia, I've had a call on the line for a few minutes now, right? Let's get to them quickly, see what they have to say, because I'm sure they're going to grow the conversation for us.
For sure, for sure.
Caller, you're on the clock.
Hi.
Good morning. Oh, I am sorry. The questions are, who is the first woman to contest an election in the Bahamas? And who is the first woman to register to vote in the Bahamas?
Okay. The first one is...
Oh, no, pause. You can't give the answer on air. You got to text the answer in.
Okay.
Because if you were right, you can give all the other people the right answer.
Oh, okay. Give me the text.
Okay, so the text number is 422-4796.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And also, there's a bonus. I got a bonus question. If you could tell me, name one, the location of one mango tree that already has mango on it right now, as an extra point for you. Because would you believe it or not, there are actual mangoes on the tree at the beginning of March. But that's an aside. Let's get back to the conversation. Alicia, how does engaging with these organizations and bodies assist or inform advocacy and activism on the ground in the Bahamas?
It's really important to engage in these conversations and on these bodies because we get to see the commitments that are made at an international level. So a lot of times our countries, like the Bahamas, would go to an international meeting or convening and they make commitments. But it's very rare that they come back and announce those commitments and let us know what they are. So it's important that we are in these spaces so that we can talk amongst ourselves and share some of this information and we know what we are holding the government accountable for.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I went to the 71st session of CEDAW, the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women.
Yes, in Geneva.
Right. I went to represent, the Rights Bahamas Human Rights Report, their report to CEDAW, but I also had an opportunity to speak on issues related to my own advocacy in the LGBTI community. And one of the responses that the Bahamian government made to the CEDAW committee was that there are protections in ordinary legislation for LGBTI people against discrimination. And since I've been home, and I think that meeting was in 2018, since I've been home, I have not heard one member of government or member of that team mention that once, ever.
It's very interesting to see what we talk about at home and what gets discussed in other spaces.
Absolutely. So what is required of us, right, on the ground as regular people to realize the commitments that our governments would have made in statements like the CARICOM statement and in statements like the ECLAC or the the Organization of Latin American and Caribbean States?
We really have to pay attention. We have to pay attention to what's happening and kind of read between the lines sometimes. And, you know, sometimes there are articles in the newspaper that sort of gloss over and say such and such a person from this ministry attended such and such a meeting, but there might not be details on that meeting. But mm-hmm. most of the time, there are recordings that you can find and there are transcripts that you can look at to see what these meetings are all about. And you might not have the time to read everyone's speeches or contributions, but you can definitely find, in most cases, an outcome document, a declaration, something that countries signed on to or ratified.
Mm-hmm. Now, does the government have an actual technical obligation to explain these outcomes and the things that they talk about in these meetings to us? And how do organizations and advocacy groups fill those gaps?
It's definitely a responsibility of the government, but that we don't see them acting on. And as you are talking about now, advocates and non-governmental organizations often have to fill in those gaps. And these organizations are already stretched, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of them are doing service provision. A lot of us are doing advocacy already. And it's another layer of work to engage the public directly and let them know what is happening and actually be able to break that down, because a lot of these documents tend to be quite technical mm-hmm. and it takes some work to understand them. So it's not enough just to share the documents. We need to be able to break them down to the bones, get down to the core message and share that with people and actually let people know how this affects them. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we think that what happens in other spaces doesn't apply to us,
right?
So we have to be able to make that connection between these sort of big, almost abstract ideas and connect it to people's actual lived realities.
Right. And then sometimes a document may focus on an issue that is not as prevalent or exacerbated in your jurisdiction, right? So for instance, femicide.
Right.
Attention to femicide is a major focus in documents like this. People in the Bahamas may say, well, look here, can you give a quick definition of femicide?
Yeah, femicide is the killing, the murder of a woman that is gender-based, so a gender-based murder.
Because she's a woman?
Yes.
Right. Like maybe in an encounter on the street, a man is flirting with a woman, trying to get her attention, and she rejects him, may reject him harshly. He acts out in violence. She objects, right? She resists, and the violence intensifies, and he kills her. Right?
Right.
And you could
that would be femicide.
Right. And you could hear him saying, "You's a woman, you're supposed to do what I say," right? Like this violence is directed towards you because you're a woman not doing what a woman should do.
Yeah, and it's not always verbalized, right? It's not always said that clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But the same way that gender-based violence doesn't necessarily occur with a person saying, "Because you are a woman, I'm correcting you," you know? But
yeah,
we know that it's a gender-based act.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's look into the document. Which commitments or actions are relevant for the Bahamas, and which ones are the government likely to focus on?
Ooh, there are quite a lot in mm-hmm. the document that are relevant to us and to our context. One of them is they're numbered, right? The paragraphs
right.
are numbered. And number 15 is an outright condemnation of violence against women. And this is really important to see that member states, governments in CARICOM are saying, we recognize that violence against women is a problem. It says, and I quote, "rooted in historical and structural inequality of power relations between women and men."
Okay, so pause right there. I think this is important for Bahamians to hear, right? Because I hear a lot of men and women saying, but look at women in the Bahamas everywhere. Like, you know, and if you look at today's Guardian and you see, like, for instance, there's a beautiful ad from the port, I think the cruise port, and they highlight women in leadership within their
right.
structure.
Right.
Right. And it's delightful. It's heartening to see all of these women in leadership positions. But this talks specifically about a violence that is rooted in historical and structural inequality. Right. And so just because women are doing well right now, or a segment of women are doing well right now, it doesn't necessarily mean, A, that all women have the same opportunity.
Exactly.
also, it doesn't mean that we have necessarily solved the root of the violence, simply that more women are escaping it. And then it negates the fact that even if women achieve a certain degree of leadership or authority, that they could still be subject to various forms of violence because they are women.
Right. Right. And it goes on to say that violence against women is intrinsically linked to gender stereotypes that underlie and perpetuate such violence. So it's really important that we take note of these gender stereotypes. And they come up in our conversations about women's leadership. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a lot of talk about the traits that women have and the traits that men have, and kind of trying to compare them in a quantitative way, mm-hmm. which isn't really possible. That's a very qualitative thing to discuss. And recognizing that we are actually training people to embody these stereotypes. So we sort of made up these ideas about what men should look like, what women should look like, and how they should behave. Mm-hmm. We made that up, and then we forced people to conform to these ideas. Mm-hmm. And this is a major issue that it contributes to violence against women. And we're talking about violence against women in a very broad way. So we're talking about physical violence. We're talking about state violence, structural violence, which would include things like, you know, a woman coming into a leadership position but not being paid the same as someone, a man, who's doing the mm-hmm. same work. So it's important that we also talk about equal pay for work of equal value and recognizing that as a form of violence.
Let's get into that, right? Because I noted in particular one of the recommendations is about labor, right? It's about unpaid labor and domestic work. And we're looking at recommendations, commitments 34, 35, and 36 in the CARICOM document. My greatest concern is for migrant women who are invited to the Bahamas to work as live-in caretakers, and the lack of regulations,
yes,
governing,
it's a serious issue,
their treatment, the lack of visibility for live-in care workers, and so when I said the lack of regulations regarding their treatment, not just their physical treatment, right? Like how many hours should they be working? Should they be forced to live in the same room as the child that they're taking care of, but also what their pay scale should look like.
And as well as benefits, do they have access to health insurance?
Yeah.
And usually people want the workers to be live-in. They feel like that justifies a subpar pay rate, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't have to pay rent. You're going to live in my house, so I don't need to pay you
right.
that much. What expenses do you have? You eat here, you live here. But a lot of these people who come here to work do that so that they can help their families abroad. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people sending money to their children to help them with school, to their spouses to help them with household expenses. But also, they should be able to maintain a certain standard of living here. And as people might have noticed since the COVID-19 pandemic and the stay at home and having to work from home, it is very easy to blur that line between work and home, and you lose track of hours when you live in the place that you work, or you work in the place that you live, and you mm-hmm. end up getting pulled in to tasks that maybe should not be yours, or working during hours that you should be off. So there are a lot of things to dig into around migrant workers, mm-hmm. particularly in the domestic space.
Absolutely. And so one of the commitments made by partnering states, CARICOM states, is to ratify and put into force the ILO Convention, that's number 190, on eliminating violence and harassment in the world of work. Can you tell us a bit about that convention and how ratifying it could possibly impact the living situation, working conditions and living conditions for women on the ground in the Bahamas?
Definitely. This convention is excellent in the way that it looks at the definitions of violence and harassment, giving them very broad definitions, as well as the definition of the world of work So it doesn't necessarily refer to a workplace, but the world of work.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks at not only what things are like in the workplace, but also calling on employers to pay attention to the way that employees get to work.
Mm-hmm.
Are they able to access transportation in a safe manner? So in a place like this where buses run...
whenever.
Yeah. And not at all during certain hours.
Right.
And being a country that's very dependent on tourism, so many people working in the hotel industry, how are people getting to and from work if they don't have cars when they're working shifts?
Right.
So are employers, like the major hotels, providing some sort of bus service
right.
to employees
so I think,
to ensure their safety?
Right. So I think the hotel workers union has a bus system or had a bus system that worked effectively and people really took advantage of that, right? But what are the conditions for women traveling at night without their own car? And what are the conditions for women traveling at night with their car?
Right.
Right? And what is the pay scale gap? What's the difference in pay for that graveyard shift, right? That overnight shift. And are women, is there a barrier to women accessing that higher paid shift because they don't have access to safe transportation?
Right. These are excellent questions that we need to be delving into
right.
and thinking about when women are and are not able to take shifts and be able to make money as well as extra money. And one of the examples that we've used in recent months, because mm-hmm. we talked a lot about the ILO Convention 190 in November around 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, we looked at the case of the young woman that reported, she's a radio host,
right?
And she reported that she was being stalked.
Yes.
And it started online, this person just tuning into all of her live
right. work-related
shows
yeah.
and making comments, and then started calling her
mm-hmm.
and then started showing up
right
at the workplace to the point that she had to always ask for another, like a coworker, to escort her
mm-hmm.
to her vehicle in the evenings. And it seems like it was an informal arrangement, right? Like you can just kind of go to a guy at work and say, hey, can
yeah.
you just walk me to my car? But when something like this is happening, especially when your workplace has put you in a position where you are a public figure,
yeah,
right? You're a public persona. What is their responsibility in ensuring your safety around the building and in getting to and from work?
Right.
And these are conversations that we don't often have.
And in the time of COVID, when businesses are employing alternate strategies, right, for selling, for trade, for placement in the market, take, for instance, there is a service provider that has staff located in popular areas around the island selling products. They pop up a tent and the staff is sitting there. There is no security, per se. I don't know if there's a male member of staff or someone designated as security that sits in a vehicle undetected to watch over them. It's typically women working. They are exposed to the elements. We think of women who sell numbers, women who work for gaming shops and,
right.
and provide that service. I don't know if it's still going on, but they move around with the machine, the handheld machine, right? What are the security, what's the security protocol for those people? Or are they freelancers and they required to take care of their own security,
right?
Right? We have all these alternate sort of employment opportunities, but do the employers see that even though their staff is outside of the traditional workplace, they still have a responsibility for their safety?
Exactly. And the ILO Convention 190 speaks to some of these things and looks at, like I said, transportation to and from work, ensuring that changing rooms and restrooms are safe places, that if a person has to travel for work,
mm-hmm.
that their travel is secured and that they're safe and that, you know, they're responsible for what takes place at the conference hall, in the hotel that staff has to stay at. So it's quite broad. There's also the very plainly stated responsibility to identify workers who are at the highest risk of experiencing violence and harassment. So in the convention, it says, quote, identify in consultation with the employers and workers' organizations concerned and through other means the sectors of occupations and work arrangements in which workers and other persons concerned are more exposed to violence and harassment.
Mm-hmm.
So it calls for some assessment
Right.
Of industries and of particular job positions and then responding to them.
Mm-hmm. And it speaks to a duty of care that employers have for employees,
yeah.
Right? And we can see that that is missing across the board in this town. And one of the most stark instances is the lack of access to bathroom facilities and the condition of bathroom facilities in some buildings and then for people who are working off-site, right? And this is a very, very basic function. But we've got some other commitments and recommendations I want to touch on, because when I first read the statement, I thought to myself, okay, this is wordy, and I don't really know if this have anything to do with the Bahamas. Maybe we're just joining in support for countries that have a far worse situation than we do. But then I saw commitments 22, 23, 24, and 25 that speak to rural women, right?
Yes.
And then I remembered that rural women are what we refer to as
Family Island women.
Women who live in the Family Island or the Out Island, or the technical term, the archipelagic exterior. And let me tell you why I use that term, people. Because when we say Out Island, we just say, oh, well, you want to live in the dirt? You want to live on the rock? You know, you get to go to the beach every day. That's the benefit. But when you speak about the archipelagic exterior and you get into these documents and you understand why it is recognized as that, right? And you understand that these bodies know that we have to ensure that people in the archipelagic exterior, right, have the extra resources necessary to participate at the same level
exactly.
as people in the interior, in the capital, right?
Right.
So that's very important. And so I'm going to list two of the things I thought about. First thing I thought about was the cost of feminine hygiene products on the outer islands. It is out of the roof. It's unbelievable in New Providence.
It is. And there's tax.
Right. So there's duty on it. We have to pay VAT on it. And then the added shipping costs and all the costs that get added from it to get from New Providence
to the family island. Right.
And so as a woman in Nassau, I am prepared to say, I will pay tax on my feminine hygiene products if it means that we could reduce the cost of the products that go to the family island.
Right. We need to increase access and recognize that some people have less access than others, and we need to find ways to make that equitable, right? To make sure that people can access these products. And while we're on this topic, it's important that we know about the Dignified Girl Project, which is run by Philippa Dean, doing amazing work ensuring that women and girls have access to menstrual hygiene products. So they're providing underwear, pads, and in some cases, some other hygiene products like soap and things like that. So if anyone is in need of those kinds of products, definitely get in touch with the Dignified Girl Project. They are on social media. You can find them on Facebook for sure, as well as Instagram.
Right. Absolutely. And another thing I thought about was the culture of sexual predation on minors and young women and young boys, right? So when it's in minors, on young women, young boys in the closed family island communities. Right. And so, you know, on the surface, I didn't even think about it. But when I delved into it, I realized that this is what this commitment is speaking to us directly in the Bahamas. And we know that we have a massive problem with sexual predation of minors in closed communities, particularly on the family island.
And we're really struggling to address the issue. There's so much there, and we really have to work on the stigma, because stigma is a part of the problem. People don't feel safe reporting because the communities are so small and so close-knit. They don't want anyone to know that this happened to their child, or the child was in this other person's care. They didn't want to bring shame on the family. And we just have to strip away the shame from it and realize that people who are victims, people who are survivors, they're not at fault. Nor are the people who didn't know anything about it. But what's important is that when you do know what's happening, that you interrupt it, you intercept, and you ensure that there is a path to justice
right.
for the person who's been violated.
Right, because I know there's a number of organizations working on strategies to build shelters for women in emergency situations, and then midterm shelters for women transitioning from a bad situation, trying to stabilize themselves, right? And even in terms of long-term living facilities. And a lot of people have been considering locating them on family islands for the safety aspect, right? Like to remove somebody from an accused or perpetrator of violence. But can we legitimately use family islands as a safe space for victims of violence or sexual violence if we cannot get the issue of sexual predation under control?
Right, particularly in the family, because it's quite interesting. We're not dealing with the issue that exists in the family islands, but also seeing the family islands as a sort of like cure for people in the capital.
Yeah. So I get one more commitment to touch on, and then let's get to the text line because we got a lot of interesting questions here. So I had some things like there's temporary special measures for equal participation in the document. There is gender mainstreaming in governance, and there's comprehensive legal reforms. I think that is the thing that I wanted to talk about, right? Well, also build capacity of law enforcement and judicial systems and actors to enforce violence against girls and women and girls. I just put the two of them together. So I think those are two commitments that speak directly to the situation on the ground in the Bahamas. I will raise, we need to address a pattern of sentences, fines, and penalties that don't reflect the severity of the crimes involved, right? And the instance I'm going to use, the example is one that's been in the paper last week. The sentence for the bus driver that was caught engaged in inappropriate sexual or sexually intimate behavior with a young girl. And I think the term used was groping, possibly. And he got a $200 fine. Fortunately,
insulting.
Right. It's unbelievable. We don't promote violence because we are mature adults, but it's the thing that makes you lose your composure.
And when you compare it to other things, like people who broke curfew to get water, people who were selling coconuts, you compare that $200 fine mm-hmm. to the fines that some of these people got
like $800
last year.
Fine.
It's just, what is important to us? It raises so many questions. What is important to us? What are the things that we care about? And who are the people that we want to hold accountable? And who are the people that we're just happy to say, well, just pay this little something, something.
Right.
And that's it.
Or is it speaks to our lack of regard for young women?
Right. Who's important? Who's worth protecting?
Right.
Do we care more about an emergency order and respect for the competent authority and that kind
right.
of thing more than we care about young women? And we can talk about the curfews and the shutdown and everything as a matter of public health,
mm-hmm.
that's great. We need to understand that issues of sexual violence, domestic violence, gender-based violence are also public health issues.
Right. And you say this is a pattern of behavior, right? I think that particular fine just outraged everybody. But we've seen since the beginning of the lockdowns an increase in domestic violence, intimate partner violence, and sexual assaults and sex-based
right.
crimes.
So there's more opportunity.
Right.
Because you're in the same space for a much longer period of time.
But at the same time, we've seen a pattern of fines that on the surface make you think that, okay, this is a magistrate who is being lenient in the time of COVID where people don't have access to money or people need to work to support their families. But these penalties are so lenient that it gives you the impression that we don't actually think these instances are crimes.
And that's an issue.
Right.
I think when we, going back again to what happens when missing girls are reported and the sort of attitude that people have about it, that, well, she made a choice and she could be home soon, but this is a crime that we're talking about.
Yeah. So I got a text here. Let's get into the text, right? Because
yeah.
I did want to talk about, I have to say it, we have a practice. I don't know if it's a policy. I'm certain it's not a law. But there's a practice where we make sexual assault and rape victims confront the accused in police interviews. And some of those people are minors, right? And this is happening on the ground in the Bahamas. And just to give you an example of why this commitment that the Bahamas government signed on to is so important on the ground in the Bahamas. So let's get to this text. This is ridiculous. Men are most likely to be victims of violence. How are you saying that women should get special treatment for travel? This is pure madness. So, here's what we're talking about. It's like this thing like black-on-black crime, right? Except when you go to the U.S., you realize that the majority of white people are killed by white people because it's a majority white country.
Right.
Right? The violence that men experience, is it violence directed towards them because they are men?
Right. It's generally not gender-based violence, right, which is what we're talking about right now.
Is it violence directed towards them because they're involved in gang activity, right? Or there's poor...
Some kind of retribution.
Right. Poor conflict resolution in terms of money owed, bills not being paid. Is it about conflict resolution and disrespect in a particular social environment? But are men being killed because they are men, right? We had an instance where a woman, I think, was burned with an iron because she did not move out of the way when her boyfriend said, move, you blocking the TV. I believe in the moment the boy thought to himself, you is woman and I is man, and I tell you move, and you ain't move, so this what you get, right? And so, yes, men are victims of violence. I think the majority of those instances come from a lack of conflict resolution and gang activity, not just because they are men and not doing what men are supposed to be doing.
Right, and women are more vulnerable and experience higher rates of violence. That is gender-based violence. And it's really important to note every time we get comments like this that because we're having a conversation about women doesn't mean that we don't recognize that there are issues that need to be dealt with regarding men as well, mm-hmm. right? It's not a minimizing
right.
of other issues to make the decision that we're going to talk about this today.
Right.
And today is International Women's Day.
Right.
So that's why we're talking about this
today,
right now. But I think that we can make other spaces to talk about violence more broadly, for sure.
Right. And we will do. My intention is to have both men and women who work in these fields to come on and talk about the impact of empowering women on the lives of men and the impact of violence against women on the lives of men. And we also want to talk about why it's important to build strong women, because women generally are responsible for raising their households, right?
Right.
And so nobody is negating the fact that these things also impact men. It's just how are we going to talk about it and how are we going to address it? So Alicia, I want to say thank you for delving into this document with me and why it's important for Bahamians to participate in this process at the government level, at the advocacy level, and at the citizen level, right? We have this big hoopla every year. Many people don't know why. Some of the Texans call in and say, I don't understand why we're talking about this again. But we had an opportunity to talk about why these things are relevant to the Bahamas. So let me get into the text line. I got one text, Green, how are you? Too straight. That's my favorite political advocate texting me. Okay, so my first answer comes from a text line with the first three digits, 821. That's 1242821. And I will be contacting you after the show to arrange details for pickup. The correct two answers are Dame Doris Johnson, who is the first woman to offer in an election, and Ruby Ann Cooper Darling, who is the first woman to register to vote, right? So that woman, she's serious. She said, I gonna be there first. I so serious about this thing. Let me repeat the answers. The first woman to run in an election, Dame Doris Johnson, and the first woman to register to vote is Ruby Ann Cooper Darling. And the winner, the first three digits of the number are 821. I will contact you after the show. I'd like to thank everybody for participating in the competition. I got a lot of wrong answers. Janet Boswick was the first woman MP. That is a correct answer, but not for this particular question. You almost make me feel like I was in politics just now. That's what they do. They give you the right answer, but not for that question. I've got some... Alicia, I got a text here about gender-based violence. I want to read that quickly. I'm so sorry. I missed it. Okay. Inland Revenue. My texters asked me to let you know that they need their business license. We are going to pretend like they are a single mother who has been laid off and made redundant and is struggling to figure out how to make ends meet. And they require just a touch more efficiency in your services. And all, right, like all government services, when you do your job, remember that poor people rely on you doing your job for their survival. And in this instance, women who have been marginalized from mainstream economies need to get that little thing in their hand so they could go on the street and sell their wares.
They do.
Tamarin Selin. Okay. Janet Boswick was the first woman member of parliament, and Ruby Ann Darling, the first woman to register to vote. You are correct. Dame Johnson would have been the first woman to contest an election. Here's another text. Hey, good morning, Erin. Have local studies been executed on gender-based violence or on the gender pay gap? And if so, where can we find these studies?
There are actually some studies, research going on right now. So we should have some new data very soon. Around the pay gap, it's quite difficult because it requires reporting and sharing of salary information, which is stigmatized here.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is a way because we know that national insurance is collecting contributions, and those contributions are based on salary.
Mm-hmm.
So we could use that data if we had access to it. So one of the issues that's raised in this CARICOM statement is member states are acknowledging that there is a serious issue with data collection,
mm-hmm.
as well as the sharing of data, and they are committing to doing a better job of data collection and disaggregated data, which means separating it out by particular factors, and in mm-hmm. this case, sex disaggregated.
Absolutely. And so to my bonus question, somebody say, I know a yard that have mango on it off Golden Isles Road. Well, thank you very much. I'll be visiting
We're
that tree shortly.
Drive around and see if we find that.
Right. But what is interesting is that there are a ton of early mangoes this year. And so I encourage people to pay attention to what's happening in your environment around you, right? We have our heads in the phones all the time. But when you look up, you may see miraculous and wonderful things around you. So we're out of time, Alicia. I want to thank you very much for having this technical conversation with me today.
Thank you so much.
We're going to close the show by sharing our woman heroes. I can let you go first.
Well, mine is going to be obvious to anybody who knows me. That's going to be Aurelie Adamson, my great-grandmother, who
mm-hmm.
ran a business on Mackey Street, Aurelie's Fashions, for 50 years, raised all kind of children, other people's children, you know,
yeah.
and just made sure that we had access to education, and we knew that we could do whatever we wanted to do in life.
Absolutely. My heroes are my grandmother, Corinne Mitchell, that taught me when you have privilege and you have smarts, you only use them to help other people, and that's it. Cheryl Carey from COB and the University of the Bahamas, a guidance counselor that always left her door open to students in need. And I want to send a special Heroes Day welcome to Kenra Newry, who is a sistren who I bucked when I went to school in London. And when I saw Kenra say, you's a Bahamian and I's a Bahamian. And if you need anything, I got you. And she's had my back since then.
That's how we do. No matter where we go,
right.
We spot another Bahamian and
right.
his family.
And that's how Bahamian women show up. They show up in the lives of other women and other people to ensure that they have what they need. It's been a great day, Bahamas. It's been a wonderful but a bit heavy discussion. Tomorrow I'm going to have another book giveaway question for you. My winner, stay tuned. I will message you and get the details to you on how to pick up your book. You guys, as we leave the show, listen to this song by Calypso Rose, one of the most successful women calypsonians in the world. And this song that she penned a few years ago because she knew it was necessary. You guys have a great day. Love each other. Touch each other with love and support.
Not with your hands.
Yeah, because it's COVID time. It's COVID time. Be safe, Bahamas. Have a wonderful day. Lee Van Miller and Unleashed is up next.